drive, far side shot, scores! Mark Savard! The Boston Bruins are back in it!
He's made going in on goal, he shoots, he scores! Tays up with half out of Ramos. Over right, 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 right to the goal. He scores! A spectacular goal by 20-year-old Jonathan Tays. You won't see any better than that.
Gabrick moves in. He scores! Marion Gabrick steps it home.
Here's Van Riemsdyk. Off the wall with it. Backhander, he scores! There's your answer. To the outside, takes his own pass. Marchand along in front. Score!
And now it's time for the Blue Line on WSHS Sterling High School Radio with your hosts, Rob Strauss and John Flacco.
Enough is enough. Start playing with some jam in here. Let's go.
And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss alongside John Flacco and special guest, the voice of the Philadelphia Flyers, Tim Saunders, everybody. Tim Saunders joining us today for a wonderful podcast session, our last podcast session of the season and of the year, of the school year. School year's done on Wednesday, so we're done. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you. Good to be here.
It's awesome.
Our pleasure.
Glad you're local guys. So you,
yeah, you guys are neighbors here because I live around the corner.
That works out well for you. Works out well. Now, before we get into talking hockey and stuff, how did you get into the broadcasting and all this stuff? Because I've listened to you on the radio for a number of years, and you know, it's what a great career to have.
I've been really lucky. And actually, I was in high school when it started. I was in a journalism class. I was a senior in high school, and the journalism teacher got up in front of the class and said that they'd been contacted by a local radio station in Detroit that was doing a sports talk show. In fact, it was one of the first, at the time, sports talk shows going on. This was 1980. They were looking for interns. Anybody interested, come and see me after class. So I did, got the information, called, got an interview, ended up interning at that radio station 3 days a week for the rest of the year. And that was kind of my baptism to radio. You know, at that point, I had played ball, I'd played hockey, and it was becoming pretty apparent pretty quickly that I wasn't going to have the ability to turn right. it into a career just because I didn't have the skills. So at that point, I was kind of looking for other ways to get and be involved, and that was what the journalism was kind of about. That was kind of a natural for me. So the radio was a nice introduction. I got to work with some really good pros in Detroit. Guys that are still working in that market, and that was a good introduction to what turned out to be a career.
It's amazing how something in high school, and it's ironic that now we're back in a high school setting, and a lot of the students that I have now are trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives right now, and it's kind of ironic that you started yours out in a high school setting and moved out to Detroit. Now, being out in Detroit, was that where you landed your first minor league gig out?
No. I grew up in Detroit. Went to college nearby.
Okay.
I mean, an hour one way or another. I went to a couple of different colleges. I went to a community college the first year. By the time I was out of high school, I had been working at a major market radio station in Detroit for a while. So I kind of had an idea, and I had a leg up on some other incoming freshmen. So as I did my search of colleges, and you know, you go and visit campuses, and I was specifically looking for a broadcast program, something occurred to me as I was getting those tours. And what I noticed is the kids that were on the air were all upperclassmen. And at that point, I'd already worked at a radio station. I wasn't willing to wait until my junior or senior year to get on the air. And I found a community college about an hour away in Port Huron, Michigan, that had a radio station. And obviously, they're in a community college, there really is an upperclassman per se. So I went there specifically because they had a radio station and I knew I could get on the air immediately. I ended up there a year and then transferred to a four-year school my sophomore year. And by then, I had enough experience where I was on the air immediately.
Now, have you always been doing hockey or has it been... I know you do some work with the Camden River Sharks as well, but have you been predominantly hockey throughout your career?
No. Hockey was my first love. Hockey and baseball, probably the two sports I played the most as a kid. But when I got out of college or left college and started looking for a job, my first job was as a board op. So it was off the air as an engineer type. And I kind of talked my way on the air as a weekend sports guy. But I spent 10 years at the first station I worked at, my first job, as a sportscaster. So I did morning and afternoon drive sportscast for 10 years.
Wow. That's pretty strong.
So it wasn't until I was well into my career that I decided, you know, hockey's really what I'd most like to do, and now what am I going to do to make that happen?
All right. Now, explain to us a little bit how you got into the gig with the Flyers and the process that went into it. That's an NHL team and you're traveling around with the team and, yep. and you're very close with the team now. What is that life like?
Well, in terms
I know it's probably
of,
very busy, but
yeah, the first half of the question, as far as how do you get to that? Broadcasters are a lot like players. You bounce around minor leagues and wait for that, big league job. So I had three or four stops. I told you I was a sportscaster for 10 years at one station. And people at that point, and I'm now 30 years old at this point, and people were asking me, well, what's your ultimate job in this career? And the more I thought about that, and the more I was willing to answer that honestly, it would have been to do play-by-play for an NHL hockey team. And it occurred to me that after 10 years, I really wasn't doing anything to make that happen. And so I finally had to be proactive and basically get out of broadcasting to become a hockey broadcaster. Because as I looked around, most of the minor league broadcasters were not employed by the radio stations that they were on. They were employed by the team doing PR, sales, and wearing all kinds of hats. So I literally had to get out of radio to go work for a hockey team to get into broadcasting to be allowed to broadcast a team's games.
Now, did you put together a demo tape? Or,
sure.
And then that's what they look at and they listen to and they say, okay, well, this guy's got his stuff together and, go forward from there.
Yeah, as far as doing hockey specifically, my high school didn't have a broadcast department. I don't think many do. You guys are real unique in that regard. At the time, there were, in most communities, they had local cable access. And I had gone into them and said, look, you guys aren't doing games. I want to be your broadcaster. I don't expect to be paid, but I need the tape. At that point, tape of you doing games is your currency because that's what you need to build a tape to be able to send to a team, to try to convince them to hire you.
What's harder to do now that you've done baseball and you've done hockey? What, from your perspective, what is the harder game to broadcast?
I've done all four major sports, and most people are surprised to hear that hockey's the easiest one for me. I think it comes down to which sport do you know the best, and really football and baseball, I think, are the harder sports to do because it's not constant action. If you can talk fast and just describe what's in front of you, hockey's the easiest sport because there isn't a lot of downtime.
Yeah, I always thought that hockey with all the constant changes in lines and players on the ice, they change roughly every 45 to 60 seconds.
Right.
How much preparation goes into your pregame learning? It's probably pretty easy at this point because you've been covering the Flyers for so long to know their names and numbers, but you go into like Columbus or Dallas or Nashville or something like that how much prep time goes into that?
That's probably the one part of the job that most people don't have a grasp of. And I think as you get into it, you learn that preparation is everything, that you spend more time or need to spend more time, way more time preparing for a game than you actually do calling the game. By the time I get to the booth for that night's broadcast, I've pretty much done all the work. Now it's the fun part of actually calling the game. you probably spend three times as much time preparing as you do actually calling the game.
So walk us through a little bit about a day of a home game and a day of a away game. Like, what time does your day start? What do you, like a normal, typical day, you know, maybe you start lunch at 12 with the team or, you know, and then go into your preparation. And then by the time 7 o'clock hits or 6:30, you guys usually do a pregame and then.
Well, for me, a typical day game would start roughly at 6 a.m, whether I'm on the road or at home. And usually the night before, unless you were playing, is spent pretty much all night prepping roster pages, bios, stats, that kind of thing. And you can get stat crazy in a broadcast, but you have to have stuff that you can support a developing storyline with. We scored two shorthanded goals in a game. I need to have access to, all right, when was the last time we scored a shorthanded goal? When was the last time we scored two shorthanded goals in a game? Who leads the team in shorthand? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's anticipating, and you can never anticipate everything, but it's knowing where to find things. So building that, everybody's got their own system, but building your prep, what you have in front of you, is kind of time-consuming. So you spend the night before doing that. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, start reading, start preparing, updating stats from around the league, because inevitably there were games the night before. Usually the guys go to the rink. If you're at the hotel, you usually leave the hotel at 10, bus to the rink for the morning skate, where we have access to players, coaches, so on and so forth, get updates on what the lineup's going to be that night, so on and so forth. Usually you're back at the hotel or home by 12:30, and you spend the rest of the day doing your prep. And again, everybody's got their own way of doing it. I've found that the preparation is the most important part of the broadcast, and it allows me to be comfortable once I get in that chair. And if I haven't done the work, then I can't be comfortable and I can't really enjoy what I'm doing because I haven't put the work in.
Right. So game starts at 6. Well, you guys usually do a pregame like around
at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
So we're back in the building after you've prepped most of the day. Mm-hmm. And I will, much like players, I'll take a nap late in the afternoon.
It's late night.
Sure. So back in the at the rink at 4:30 or a little after 4. We usually meet with Lavi, the coach, at about 4:45, eat dinner in the press room, go upstairs, and get ready for the game. Game starts at 7, warm-ups at 6:30. And
that just kind of takes care of itself.
Right.
Now post-game, I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
I just have a question. How do you think technology has changed the way you prepare for a hockey game since the time first
started?
That's
a really good question, John, because we always talk about, you know, Gene Hart was the voice of the Flyers for over 30 years.
Yeah, that guy wouldn't know anything about that.
Oh, come on. I know that stuff.
Well, any longtime broadcaster back in the day, before computers and before all that stuff, their prep, not that they worked any less hard. In fact, it might have been more difficult trying to unearth some of the things that they had to unearth without benefit of the Internet. Mm-hmm. But Gene Art had a notebook in front of him, and everything was written down. Stats, and you know, he guarded that like his Bible for the season. There's a funny story about Steve Coates, the first time he ever worked with Gene Art. And he got thrown in as a color man, and it's probably halfway through the season, and Coates, he's a little kind of a nervous type. He's kind of all over the place, and of course, he spilled a cup of coffee on Gene's notebook, and Gene wanted to kill him.
Whoops.
So your question about how has technology changed, I mean, it's changed everything.
Yeah.
The fact that we have access to computers.
But has it made it better? Do you think, as preparation?
Well, I think it has, just because you can get to more information. Mm-hmm. My objective is to know as much about the opposing team once we get into a game as I can. So I can tell stories about guys on the other team, what are the pertinent storylines for that club that the fans listening in Philadelphia may not be privy to.
That's interesting. Very interesting. And, of course, you work with Chris Therrien.
Yep.
Ex-Flyer. You've also worked with Brian Propp as well.
And Coetzee, actually.
And Coetzee, yeah, as well. So just a great set of
co-host with you with NHL experience in Chris Terrien and Brian Propp. You're currently working with Bundy, mm-hmm. which has got to be great. And I actually caught a little bit of the broadcast on the road, I believe, on the Flyers-Penguins game when it was just out of control. And I heard
I know Bundy, the game you're talking about.
Bundy going crazy, and I know that got a lot of press. What's it like working with what is having a co-host like Chris Terrien add to your broadcast?
Well, to do that job effectively, the color job, first of all, you pretty much do have to be a former player.
Sure.
And his job is different than mine. I'm following the puck and telling the what, and he should be explaining the why. Why is this guy trying to do this? What's the correct play here? Where was the mistake? That kind of thing. Bundy's got the right personality and attitude, and it takes that to be able to recognize the hole that he's got within the constraints of a broadcast and be able to fill it, communicate the idea, and get out of the way of the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he's a natural fit to that, and he's got a sense of humor. So he and I actually have a lot of fun working with each other and kind of kidding each other. And we hope it sounds like two buddies sitting in a bar watching
and
a game.
It does.
Together.
It does. Because whenever I'm on the road with, I have two kids at home, and I'm always going all over the place with them. So if I'm listening in the car, I listen in to you guys. And it's just funny that the one game that I caught was the Penguins game where it just got ridiculously out of control. And you can definitely tell that there's a rapport between you guys. And I think that's a big key.
The funny part of that story is in the 15 years that I've been here, I've kidded him about this, that, you know, we – over the course of our season, I have to grab guys for interviews often to fill an intermission or whatever. And those are usually taped, pre-recorded the day before, the morning of a game, so on and so forth. In the 15 years, I've only had one player not only decline but go tell me to blank myself when I asked him after a game. And it was him. He turns out to be my partner.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That must have been, oh, by the way, here's your new co-host.
Yeah, I'm like, great.
Oh, here we go. This is going to be awesome. Now, how long have you been working with Bundy?
Bundy's been doing it, I think, now 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah. And he's really taken to it.
I think
he's discovered a second career.
And he lives locally as well. I know he's in the South Jersey
area. He's in Marlton, I think.
Yeah. So that's... I'm going to hit you now with a couple best ofs.
Okay.
All right. First one, your favorite game that you've ever announced.
Favorite game. Well, for what it meant, certainly going to the Stanley Cup Finals a couple of years
sure.
ago, that whole series, any finals game was amazing. Game 7 against Boston to complete the comeback was certainly memorable. So that's got to rank up there. Obviously, the 5 overtime game against Pittsburgh when Keith Primeau scored to end the longest game in team history. And in fact, it's the third longest game in NHL history. The other two games that were longer were at a time before teams were doing complete broadcasts. They'd often come on the air after a first or a second period and start from there. As hard as that is to imagine. So that 5 overtime game, we believe, is the longest radio game in history.
Wow.
So that would
part of history
rank
now,
up
too.
There. So more often than not, playoff games are the ones that stick out.
Sure. Let's go with your favorite goal call. Primo's
favorite goal call might be different than most important. Primo's would be memorable. I don't know that I had a great goal call. At that point, you've been on the air for 6 hours, and you're just trying to save your voice,
sure.
and you end up hoarse and screaming it when it finally ends, because it ended
2:00,
at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
it was amazing. So I don't know if that call necessarily – you can't plan for goal calls. You know, you can't plan ahead of what you're going to say. A couple of years ago in that Stanley Cup run in the series with New Jersey, Dan Carcillo scored an overtime goal in, I think, game 2. And how that call came out just is probably memorable to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, one of the funniest calls, not I want to say funny, but when was it Patrick Kane scored the overtime winner in game 6 and nobody knew where it went because it got wedged underneath the inlet of the goal net. And everybody was just kind of like,
There was a moment that nobody was too sure. And I said afterwards, I felt bad for the Chicago broadcaster because that's the call that we all dream of making.
Yep.
And it kind of took it away from him in a way.
It wasn't like he put it top shelf and the water bottle
explodes. Yeah, so you can't have that call of your career that they win the game in overtime and they've won the Stanley Cup. That's your career, hopefully, highlight. And it kind of spoiled that because it made it difficult to have that memorable call.
That's a tough one. That is a tough one. What's your favorite arena or city to visit on the road?
I've always said Montreal, the building itself. We judge cities and buildings by what are our working conditions and what's the broadcast booth like. And the building architectural laws are different in Canada than they are in the States. So buildings are built differently in Canada, and the broadcast booths tend to be hung out over, almost over the ice. So you're a lot closer to the ice, almost looking straight down.
Oh, that's going to be a great vantage point for you then.
And I think the way that started was when they built Maple Leaf Gardens in the 20s. Conn Smythe was the owner of the team, and he brought his broadcaster in, Foster Hewitt, which was a famous first broadcaster in hockey, and actually consulted with him. And he said, while we design this building, go tell me where you want the broadcast booth to be. So he went to a department store and went to a balcony level and decided where he wanted, how high he wanted, how close to the ice, and they had to actually build what was called the gondola. So a lot of Canadian buildings have their broadcast booths suspended, again, almost over the ice, not quite over the ice, but really close. It changes the perspective, and so Montreal, because of where the booth is and in relation to the ice and the building itself, which is one of the best buildings on the lake, that's probably my favorite.
So Montreal.
Yeah.
Now, to flip it around, toughest place to play outside of Philly?
Toughest place for a team to play?
From what, all the hockey that you've watched with the Flyers and everything, what do you think the toughest fans, the toughest place to play on the road?
Well, I'd answer that in a couple of ways. Detroit, only because the Flyers have had almost zero success in Detroit. They finally won a game this year in Detroit, but they had gone, I think, 16 years without ever winning a game. Chris Therrien was a longtime Flyer. In fact, he was the longest tenured athlete in Philadelphia by the end of his career. He had never won a game in that building.
Wow.
Including in the Stanley Cup Finals in 97. I've never liked Madison Square Garden. They're trying to rebuild it and re-update it now.
How can you do that, though? It's stuck in the middle of like a major metropolitan.
Well, that
like,
itself
city.
Is it's great, be- except that the building is so outdated, and it's not very nice.
It's very dark
it's
there.
It's dirty. It's dark.
Yeah, it seems
they're making improvements in that regard, but I've never liked the building. Maybe I'll like it when they improve our broadcast position because, as I said, we judge buildings by that.
Yeah, and how was speaking of the Rangers, how was the Winter Classic experience for you? It's kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, the Flyers got two cracks at it, one in Boston. And
I've been fortunate to cover most every major sport in the course of my career, Rose Bowls, Super Bowls, World Series games. The Winter Classic at Fenway Park was probably the neatest sporting event I've ever been part of. That was really cool. And I had never been in Fenway Park before, so that probably is one of the reasons.
I thought the Philadelphia fans and the media and everybody did such a great job of hyping up the Winter Classic. It was so well done, and you couldn't have picked a better place for it.
Yeah, the one in Philly was cool. The disadvantage is you have a new building, and it's really hard to match the atmosphere that you had at Fenway Park. So the venue plays a huge part of it. I'd much rather do it in a Wrigley Field or a Yankee Stadium or a Fenway Park than in any of the new ballparks just for that reason.
Or how about University of Michigan Stadium?
I'll take University of Michigan because that's where it's going to be next year. I'm trying like crazy to get up there for the Winter Classic for the Toronto-Detroit. But and you mentioned earlier people that – in your preparation, interviewing people and coaches and players and whatnot, is there anybody that you circle on? Like, I really, this guy does a really, really good interview, or you know, this guy doesn't, not so much on this interview. But who's like the go-to guy? You always know you can get a soundbite whether you win or lose. You know you're going to get a good soundbite out of.
Well, you know, on this team, sure, there are guys that are more comfortable in that role and will have something fairly intelligent and not cliche-ish every time you put a microphone in your face. And you identify those guys. Kimmo Tiimonen's really good on this team. Claude Giroux takes that as a serious part of being a leader on the hockey club. Chris Pronger can be kind of a pain to deal with, but if you ask him in the right way and you approach him correctly, he usually has something fairly intelligent and worthwhile to say. I've always felt as an interviewer how good the interview has more to do with you than it does your subject. Some guys you have to work a little harder at and be a better interviewer. If the guy is chatty and is easy to talk to, you don't have to be that good of an interviewer to get sound out of him. If he's not that way, you got to work a little harder.
How much of an obstacle is it for you dealing with somebody that with the language barrier, somebody that may not speak? I mean, you're talking, hockey is a unique sport because you have players from all different areas of the world playing. You have, mm-hmm. you have some Czechs, you have Russians and all sorts of other players, French speaking. How do you break that language barrier with
well, people? Some of them you can't. Sergei Bobrovsky, he's been here a few years and I haven't interviewed him. We chat. He can say good morning. He can order breakfast, but his English is not to a point where he's comfortable doing interviews, so he really doesn't, unless it's through a translator. And using a translator in a radio interview is pretty ineffective, I think. Yeah. So we don't really force that issue. Ilya Brizgalov is another. His English is better.
He's hysterical. Yeah, well. He's a piece of work, that guy.
He's a piece of work is right, and the organization would just as soon he talk less and concentrate more on playing the game, so we don't really go to him for interviews so much.
We're actually going to get into Briz a little bit later on in our podcast here, but you know, that's just a great wrap-up of, you know, your career and how you got to where you are now and just a little bit of the experience of being on the road. How tough is it being on the road 9 months? You're home for 4 days and then you mm-hmm. go away for a West Coast road trip. I mean, how difficult and straining is it on you and your family and just everything that goes into being on the road?
The toughest part, and it took me years to learn this, was when I got home and learning that I had to adjust to their way of doing things, not the other way around.
That's got to be tough. I mean, it's just got to be a great experience. You've been to every single NHL arena.
Yeah.
You've got some great stuff. I only have six under my belt. I mean, you have all of them and then some, even the ones that aren't buildings anymore,
sure.
which has got to be great. But it's just a great overall job I think you have, and it's just a great thing you're doing.
I've been pretty fortunate, and a lot of times it's being in the right place at the right time and getting the right help, because each city I was in and each guy I worked for helped me pretty much get the next job. So if you're fortunate enough to have that kind of support along the way, who knows what you can get to.
Awesome. And that's going to get us off to our very first break right here on the Blue Line with special guest Tim Saunders, voice of the Philadelphia Flyers. You're listening to the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. We are back right after this.
If you have cancer, you know someone with cancer, or if you are a caregiver to someone with cancer, Clementine Cancer Support Group may be the place for you to come and share with others and learn how they are handling this life-changing experience. They meet the first Tuesday of each month at 10 a.m. and the third Tuesday of each month at 7 p.m. at the Laurel Hill Bible Church, located at 1260 Blackwood Clementine Road in Clementine, New Jersey. For more information, visit laurelhillbiblechurch.org or call the church office at 856-784-6200.
Here we go. Come with me.
Come join the local youth every Sunday night at Stratford United Methodist Church on the corner of Union and Central Avenue. The youth group is a rapidly growing group, and they would love to have you. The group consists of 7th to 12th graders and meets every Sunday night from 7 to 9 at the church. Come join us weekly for crazy games, live music, biblical life lessons, and some great snacks. Join now so you don't miss out on upcoming camping trips, scavenger hunts, swim parties, and more. For more information, contact Stratford Church at 784-9135 or Jared Claiborne at 856-287-0717.
to the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. Rob Draft alongside John Flagler. Special guest Tim Saunders from the Philadelphia Flyers joining us for our final broadcast of the season and of the school year. So we're going to get into the second period now, talk some NHL playoffs and cup finals. We thought that this whole thing, we'd be talking about the Kings hoisting the cup and their parade, which would probably not be in a parking lot. Before we even get into the cup finals, John, your last installment of the X-Flyer Report.
X-Flyer Report.
Go for it.
All right. As he has been through the playoffs, Justin Williams leading all point scorers with 15 points. He is a +8 for the playoffs.
That's strong.
Which is amazing. I mean, they played 19 games. They played four less games than the Devils have played at this point. And we have, of course, ex-Flyers Mike Richards and Jeff Carter with 13 and 11 points, respectively. Richards a +1, Carter -1. Big key stat, though, here, game-winning goals. Mike Richards, 1, Jeff Carter, 2. Justin Williams, none. So, but, yeah, you could see, we talked about this before, the contribution that Williams has made and being on that top line that he has. I mean, that's just such a... That chemistry of that line is just amazing.
I'm surprised that they put Gagne back in after coming back from the concussion. Then things are going so well for the Kings. And usually, I don't know if it's a superstition thing with hockey players or whatnot, but it seems like when you have somebody that hasn't played a game since roughly Christmas time and then comes back in the beginning of June, right in the middle of an amazing, probably one of the best cup runs in history, they somehow mix him in. Into the fold, and he's doing things.
I think it's getting it done. Yeah, I think with just the skill level that Gagne has, it's kind of hard to keep him off that lineup. You got to find a spot for him on that lineup somewhere.
I agree, and not only offensively, but he's been a sound defensive player his whole career, so there's no risk in putting Simone Gagne back in the lineup. Veteran leadership, that time of the year is
pretty important. I think he actually got time on one of the top lines at the end of the last game, probably
easing him back into the lineup.
Yeah, he was in Dustin Brown's spot. Dustin Brown didn't play a whole lot in the last half of the third period the other night. So, it was fortunate they had Gags on the lineup to slide in.
He was playing real well early in the playoffs, Dustin Brown. I think he's kind of faded off a little.
I think it's a credit to New Jersey, too, because they've been playing. I mean, they've played every single, with the exception of Florida, which was a real stinker of a series. Of all the first-round matchups, I think we talked about this back in April, that was the one matchup that we were just kind of like, that's an okay matchup. But Dustin Brown, a local product, too, from Jersey, I believe. And he's or from New York, somewhere in the tri-state area, I believe. So he has 7 goals, 10 assists on the season for 17 points, and his name is in the running for, should they go on and win the Stanley Cup, his name is in the running for the Conn Smythe Trophy. I don't think he's going to get it. I think some guy named Jonathan Quick pretty much has that one wrapped up. I heard Barry Melrose on the NBC networks saying that there are actually 3 guys in the running, and I'm like, come on, Barry, come on, dude.
The only guy I would make a case for would be Kopitar, because he's really stepped up in a lot of big spots and played well.
So if the Devils win it, who is it?
I'm gonna have to go Marty. Marty's numbers have been really, really good.
I think Parisi will get some consideration.
Parisi, absolutely. And he's a free agent after this year. So that's going to be interesting to see where he goes next year. Is this the last gasp with him, do you think, Tim?
Well, only because of the financial straits that team is in. They're borderline headed to bankruptcy, and I don't know that they're going to be able to commit the money. For the good of that franchise, hopefully they find a way to keep him there, because if they have to let another star player go for nothing, that's not good for the organization.
And you have to think that it's Brodeur's last year as well.
You know, I don't think that's true.
Well, it's his last year of his current contract.
Yeah, whether he wins the cup or not, he sounds like he's coming back for another year.
Yeah, and we talked about that a lot, too, before the playoffs started, before he made that comment about whether or not he'd be back. We kind of thought that if he won going out, that would be a no-brainer. He would.
You know, I kind of like his attitude about this. It's not so much, do I want to go out on top, because that does make a great story. But for a guy who, financially, the money's not an issue, once you retire, you're pretty much retired and you're done. So most guys that get to that point in their career and they talk to enough guys who have just gone through it and who have just recently retired, most of those guys will tell you, don't stop playing until you're sure you want to stop playing. Recce went out on top with a Stanley Cup.
Sure.
But I think in the long run, I think you're better off playing until you don't think you can play anymore. And if you win the Cup, if Marty wins the Cup this year and then retires but still thinks he could play and still wants to play, that's going to be kind of a miserable first year of retirement, isn't it?
Do you think that the fact that, like you said, financially he said he'd be willing to play for an amount that probably is below?
Yeah, I don't think financial is going to play into it.
Give him the hometown discount, they might be able to keep him on for another year or two.
Yeah, I heard rumors of Dominic Hasek wanting to come back. And
yeah, my kid's really hot on that rumor. He's 47. Forget it. Nobody is going to give Dominic Hasek a contract.
You don't think that a team that maybe is a second goaltender, maybe it's just like one of those one-day contracts.
I might be proven wrong, but no, I don't think.
I don't know. If Thomas Vokoun gets traded for a seventh-round pick, how does Dominic Hasek make a team?
that's true. I think we did talk about the Penguins picked up Thomas Vokoun from the Caps for a seventh-rounder.
And then signed him to a two-year deal. So he's going to make $2 million as a backup goaltender, theoretically, behind Marc-Andre Fleury. That's the surprising part of that. You don't pay a backup goaltender that much.
No. It is a lot of money for a backup.
One of the questions I want to ask you, Tim, what did you think about this time last year about the offseason moves of both Carter and Richards? We knew that, I think there were rumors that one of them was going to go and one of them was going to stay. And then the big surprise was, by the way, they're both gone.
Yeah. It surprised me to a degree. The rumor going into this time of the year was that Carter was going to be moved. I would have traded the other guy before I traded Jeff Carter. The day it happened, I'm actually driving home to Detroit, so I'm on the road. I'm about 3 hours on the road, and my phone starts exploding. And the first call I got was the Carter deal. And I was upset that, in my mind, they traded the wrong guy. And then 30 minutes later, I find that they're both gone. There were issues here that, and unfortunately, if the Kings win the Stanley Cup, Paul Holmgren, in some people's mind, might have egg on his face. And I think that's so flawed to think of it that way, because it wasn't going to work here. And I think he pulled off two unbelievably successful trades. If you look at all the things that he got in return for those two players, he set this organization up for the next 10 years.
It just looks really bad now because the Kings are one win away from hoisting the Stanley Cup with a handful of ex-Flyers.
It does, but unfortunately what happened toward the end of their Flyer careers here became apparent that you had to move, if not both of them, you certainly had to move Richie. He had issues with his head coach. It got to the point where he wouldn't even talk to Peter Laviolette for the last year and a half. How can you have that kind of relationship between your captain and your coach? That just doesn't work. And the bottom line is that the Flyers as an organization were looking for guys whose first priority was winning hockey games and were willing to put hockey before everything else. And at their age and at that point in their careers, those two and some other guys who are no longer here were more inclined to enjoy the lifestyle than they were willing to put hockey first. And I don't think that's a recipe for success. I think it kind of shook them into reality, the trade, and I think now their attitudes might be a little different in L.A.
That was a unique situation where you have two of their arguably their best players on the team. But a great job by Giroux this season, stepping up and being pretty much the mainstay of this team throughout the whole year.
Sure.
But you think of what they got back in return. Wayne Simmonds had an incredible year. Jacob Voracek had a very good season. Who else did they got? They got
Shen.
Sean Couturier with the draft pick. So it was a home run, both of those trades, and they're going to just continue to get reap the benefits of those deals for years to come, I think.
And do you still talk to Hexy at all?
I play golf with a good buddy of his who also plays. So I play golf with Ron a couple of times, and every time we're in L.A. or he's here, obviously he'll stop by the booth, so we have some contact. He's the one guy there. He and John Stevens might be the guys that I root for the most to win the Cup. It'll be interesting to see what effect that has on Hexy's career, because as an assistant GM, obviously his goal is to run a team someday.
Are you surprised that New Jersey has gone as far as they have gone this
not
this
after season? Playing them. I think a lot of people underestimated, and maybe including the Flyers, underestimated how good a team the New Jersey Devils were. And, you know, they've got that reputation, or always had that reputation, as being a good defensive trap team. Yeah. And they don't play that way anymore. They're as aggressive on the forecheck as pretty much any team in the league. And it was their ability to establish their forecheck and press the issue. I saw things out of the Flyers that we hadn't seen all year in terms of lack of composure with the puck, panicking under the pressure and turning the puck over in areas that they hadn't all year. The better team won that playoff series between the Devils and the Flyers, and now the Flyers this summer are going to have to go to work and figure out what do they do because of it.
Do you think
– go ahead.
Go ahead, John.
Do you think that the that forecheck that the Devils applied to the Flyers was – they looked at that as a weakness of the Flyers? Because in watching the games, the Devils games against the Kings, I noticed that that forecheck isn't as – they're not as – it's not the same the way they played against the Flyers. Now, granted, some of the L.A. Kings defensemen are pretty good with the puck.
Well, I think they identified the weakness for the Flyers at that point, and it was a lack of mobility back at the blue line. Their defensemen, they knew we were shorthanded. We had guys hurt. Right. We had guys playing hurt, as every team does.
Yeah.
So they were pretty quick to get on the Flyer defensemen and press them down low. I don't think the Flyers did a very good job in support, meaning the forwards coming back. And because there were more injuries than anybody realized, I think the Flyers wilted under that pressure.
Mm. Yeah, we were surprised when we saw the list of surgeries that came out right after.
Like five of them.
It was alarming.
It was crazy. I think it was Giroux, Simmons, JVR. There was one other. I think Matt Carl was the fifth one.
Right.
So it was very interesting to see. That always comes out after teams get eliminated. And I think whether New Jersey wins the cup or not, I think something's wrong with Kovalchuk. And there's been a lot of speculation about, is he hurt? Is he playing hurt? Is he, you know, what's really wrong? Whatever happens when this whole season is over, I think he's going to be the one that's on the list of getting some type of corrective surgery or something. Everybody's hiding injuries.
I'd be concerned for him if that weren't the case, because you're right, he hasn't had the kind of, certainly in the finals, he hasn't been the player that they needed him to be. Remember, he missed a game against the Flyers and then came back quickly. They thought it was a groin injury at the time. And that first game back, he was great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know exactly where the injury is, but I would agree with you that there is an issue there.
Do you think the teams underestimated the Devils because of the division that they play in? They were the fourth best team in the Atlantic Division, 1 point behind the Flyers, but still a very, very strong team. You think a lot of teams going into the playoffs just kind of said, eh, it's the Devils.
Yeah.
They're sixth seed.
I think there's some truth to that. And I think bottom line, the Devils taught us again what the Giants have taught us in football, what every other sport. It comes down to who's playing the best at the right time of the year. Were they necessarily the best? Look at the championship teams in all of the sports recently. Were they necessarily the best team in that league, clear cut, throughout the year? In most cases, no. But they were the teams that were playing the best at the right time of the year.
LA Kings, switching it over to the Kings back again. You think, should the Kings go on and win the Cup? They've only lost four games this entire postseason.
One on the road.
And one on the road more recently. It was Saturday night, I believe.
Yep.
Is this the best performance, a playoff performance by a team in the history of the league?
I wouldn't say history, because that
recent history
encompasses a lot. And if you go back to the Montreal Canadiens in the 70s, I mean, they had some unbelievable runs. They were an incredibly good team. In recent memory, yeah. I mean, when you've won your first, 10 road games in a playoff run, that's unheard of.
We were trying to think of this from a standpoint of not just hockey, but outside hockey, any sport, football, basketball, baseball. Imagine winning 10 consecutive games, period, whether at home or away.
Right.
Now you're going outside of your comfort zone with your home fans and whatnot, and now you're going, okay, we're going to go on the road and rat off 10 straight. Just that's unheard of.
Yeah, it's great coaching. they did a great, Dean Lombardi did a really good job of putting the right pieces in place, especially getting Carter late toward the trading deadline. He's done a wonderful job there, and reuniting those two is going to end up being good for both of them.
So you have game number six tonight, Monday night at 8 o'clock on the NBC family of networks. And here's where we do the pick 'em, because there's either one game left or there's two games left, and then that's going to be it. And I think prediction-wise, John, we've been all over the map pretty much all season. I know I called Kings, and well, the last time we did this broadcast, it was Kings were up 3-0. Yeah. And now we're like, okay, now it's just a matter of, okay, do they sweep it or do they?
Well, neither of us said to sweep, so we were right in that respect.
Yeah. I'm still sticking with, I would love to see Jersey, you know, just close it out and make history, because they're just playing so well. But the Kings are also playing well. And it's tough because I'm kind of torn.
Well, we talked about this
I just want to see more hockey. I'm not going to lie to you. I hope New Jersey wins tonight so that there's a game on Wednesday night. But the problem with Wednesday night, that's graduation.
Yeah.
So we're going to miss probably like the first period because of graduation.
Boy, that's awful selfish of them, isn't it?
That is kind of selfish. I'll have to podcast it in the booth or something. But no, we should be back. Graduation's at 6:30.
Yeah.
We'll
see the important part.
We're golden. We're golden.
I said at the beginning of the series, all right, do I root for the ex-Flyers, which I really didn't want to do. I kind of mimicked it, your feeling. I thought Richards was – he was not one of my favorite Flyers. But do I root for him? Do I root for the Devils, which is impossible. I cannot do that as a Flyers fan. That's out of the question. So my only option was to root for 7 overtime games to make it good hockey.
And that's what he said at the beginning. It was so funny. He posted something and he said, I hope all these games go to overtime.
Well, there's an old school of thought that you root for the team that beat you. I don't know how much value there
I can't
is
root
to
for
that.
The Devils.
You're right. I have a hard time rooting for the Devils. So I don't honestly even know if I have a rooting interest.
Yeah, we're allowed to root, though. You don't have to, but we are allowed to root. So I will not root for the Devils.
I'll
no matter
tell you,
what.
Fear is probably the best motivator in pro sports. And I think the LA Kings have got to be feeling that right now. So I'd be surprised if the Kings didn't win game six at home.
I have to stick with you on that one because I really think that it's time to wrap it up. I don't like it when teams win championships on somebody else's backyard. I like it when teams win at home and there's that whole craziness of the fans. It makes the pictures look great. It's just this whole I really don't like it when, especially when teams skate around with the cup and they're the building's half empty because they're all mad and
kind of like
whole,
the Blackhawks did in our.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but I'll let you bring that up. I haven't touched the cups in '67. So
you touched the cup
at the Hockey Hall of Fame. That was.
See, I
have you been? Have you been to the Hockey Hall?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now is that the same cup? I heard it's there's
and
a
never and you never touch it.
No.
Not if you're hoping to win it.
No, you just kind of put your arm around it. You never touch it.
There are replicas. And so the one that is traveling and will be presented is the actual cup. The one more often than not displayed in the Hall of Fame is the replica. Yeah.
I love going to Toronto, and I've been there once. My wife and I went up there, made a weekend out of it, got tickets to see the Sabres and the Leafs there. And it's just a great... That's a great hockey town. I'm biased, of course, but it really is a unique experience. You can catch a game there and catch the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Halls of all the Hall of Fames and the history. I mean, the fact that hockey's got this trophy that has so much lore to it, I mean, it really separates hockey, I think, from all the other sports.
The fans up there are rabid, too. I think the way I equate hockey fans in Eagles fans – are to the like football fans are to the U.S. as what hockey fans are to the Canadians.
Sure.
And that's kind of how I equate that. That's my random thought. You know, that's just one of those things that I think is kind of cool. So you have, John, you have the Kings.
I'll take the Kings.
You have the Kings tonight, Tim.
You're right. We don't make predictions, but I'll be surprised if the Kings don't win.
All right. And I think we're going to see the cup lifted tonight. And that's going to end our second period. I just heard the horn. You guys didn't hear it. I heard it. So we're going to get off to our final break of the podcast. We're going to talk some Flyers season review and evaluation. We're going to look up to next season's preview. You're listening to The Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. We are back right after this.
Man, there's nothing good on the radio anymore. It's the same thing on every station.
Hey, not every station's like that. I just started following At Nights Radio on Twitter. They tweet news about the Sterling community and they have their own radio station.
But what makes them different?
Well, the whole station is run by students.
That's awesome, and I love Twitter. I'm gonna go follow At Nights Radio right now.
Follow At Nights Radio on Twitter to receive news about sports, music, and everything Sterling.
Sterling High School is currently seeking high school and college students with Red Cross lifeguard certifications who would be interested in working as a lifeguard this spring at Sterling North, also known as the former Voorhees YMCA. Students will be compensated at a rate of $10 an hour. Interested students should submit an application, which is available in the general office at Sterling High School during the hours of 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. or call 856-784-1287. That's 856-784-1287.
Welcome back to the Blue Line on WSHS Sterling High School Radio. Rob Strauss, John Flacco he had to leave. He's out of here, but we're still with Tim Saunders, radio voice of the Philadelphia Flyers. And speaking of the Flyers, we're going to pick your brain a little bit here, Tim, and talk about the Flyers.
Ain't much to pick.
Talk a little bit about the Flyers season in review and just give some grades out and then see what's going to come up for next season. One of the big off-season signings for the Flyers was, outside of the Richards and Carter trades, was Ilya Brizgalo. They finally got the goaltender. And for the majority of the regular season, pretty much fit the bill. I think he did a fairly good job. Split some time with Bob there a little bit. Just wanted to pick your brain a little bit on how you felt Briz fit into the mix this season.
In fairness, I think he had a rough first year, maybe not unexpected when you sign a big contract and you come from a non-hockey market in Phoenix and now have to jump into a hockey-crazed market like Philadelphia. I think it was a little bit predictable that he would struggle for a while, and I think he did. I think his personality sometimes gets lost in translation a little bit, and I think that happened here a little bit, where he's this funny guy, but sometimes things don't come out the way that he intends them to because of the language barrier, and I think that became a little bit of a negative. That was why I think there was a time where the Flyers as an organization wanted him to talk less in the media and concentrate more on playing. I think adjusting, having gone through a year, I think he'll be better off. He got on a roll toward the end of the regular season and played really well. Mm-hmm. And then in the playoffs, it was kind of a mixed bag, I think. Obviously, they've committed long-term to this guy, and they've got to hope that he can find, as he put it, the peace in his mind to be able to play in this market. He's a different guy.
And he's talking about bears and making all these crazy analogies.
Which is why the organization would like him to talk less.
Yeah, and play more.
I know it's entertaining, and it's the writers love him because it's good quote, but that's not what he's here to do.
And do you think that the 24/7 series had anything to do with...
It was
with
a disaster for him.
Just everything coming into this, like you said, coming from a smaller market, coming into a hockey crazed market in Philadelphia. And now all of a sudden you have HBO cameras on you for 2 or 3 months leading up to the Winter Classic.
There's a culture in hockey that is taken so seriously, and it's more prevalent in hockey and more important in hockey than I think in any other sport. And it's that whole team concept that everything is for the team and that individuals have to put their own stuff aside. And again, I think because he's Russian and didn't grow up here, I don't know that. I think that's something that those guys have to learn as they go. It doesn't come as naturally for them as it would maybe a Canadian kid or an American kid. And I think he's still in the process of understanding what it means to be a good teammate and to fit into that culture. You mentioned the Winter Classic and the 24/7, and a lot of the things that came out of his mouth, even when he found out he wasn't playing, were about him. That doesn't work. That's not what you're looking for.
I think the 24/7 series was great. I was completely addicted to it because it showed the behind the scenes stuff.
Sure.
That athletes, pro athletes, are actually human beings, and they have lives. They have families. They enjoy doing things like just normal things that normal people that aren't in the spotlight all the time that they do.
Yep.
I thought the series was fantastic, and I know Briz is he's. That, I remember the scene with him and Jager, and they're having the breakfast. And
Jager gets up and moves,
and it was just so entertaining to watch. And I kind of wish that they did that throughout the whole season, but I didn't think that I didn't think it'd be a very good idea. I don't know what team would sign off on that to just follow a team around for the entire season.
Actually, Edmonton Oilers up in Canada do over the course of the year, and it's an ongoing show.
Is that on the NHL Network?
It is. Yeah. You're right. It gives you a window to what really goes on, and it's pretty neat.
And they take it as seriously as Flyers fans take it. I mean, that's amped up another level up in Canada because they're still thirsting for a cup since '93 when Montreal won. What is going to happen with Chris Pronger for next season? Is he going to be back, or have his injuries pretty much finished him for his career? It would really be a shame to see him to hang it up due to injury, but he didn't play at all last season.
If we see Chris Pronger again in an NHL game, I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not making predictions. I don't make predictions.
Sure.
It's silly to speculate on a guy's, especially a guy's injury, but the severity of what he's dealing with is pretty grim. And you know, you look at the guys that have gone through the post-concussion issues that, like a Keith Primeau has gone through, sure. And some of the other guys, Pat LaFontaine. It's not something that, when it gets as bad as it is with Chris, that you can usually bounce back from. And at this point, there are more important things than continuing his hockey career that are at play here.
Sure, and because I know he has a family as well,
right.
And it's you kind of have to put life ahead of,
yeah, right.
of sport, and it's the right move. Obviously, it's kind of interesting to see how concussions have progressed over the last 10 years or so, and the emphasis on concussions.
Yeah,
and how
I don't
some,
think the concussions have progressed. I think our understanding and recognition of them,
and
have,
it's across the board in every single sport. Where if you get a concussion, you're looking at being out minimum a week, 2 weeks until you are cleared by all these doctors, and it can end. One concussion can end your career.
I'll tell you, I'm a little embarrassed and ashamed, and all of us who've been in the business long enough have a similar experience, I think. 15 years ago, I'm in Tulsa, and one of my jobs, I'm basically an assistant general manager there, and we had a French player who went down in a playoff run with a concussion, and you know, the old adage back then was, you know, suck it up, get back in the lineup. And he refused to get back in and put himself back into the lineup until he felt he was ready. He was suffering from a concussion, and none of us had an understanding of what that meant and how serious those issues were. And, you know, you look back on it now, and it's like, oh, my God, we were so misinformed. You know, could have ended the guy's career, and a lot worse if he had put himself in danger.
And you look at Sidney Crosby as well. He can't seem to shake it. He missed a majority of the of this season due to concussions, and it's becoming an epidemic, not just in hockey, but I think in every single sport across the board. You're starting to see a lot more attention being paid to concussions, and I think it's a smart thing to do. And it's a shame that they hadn't thought about that 10-15 years ago. But
yeah,
I don't think the medical science was as advanced 10-15 years ago as it is now.
No, and I think not only are we recognizing when they occur a lot better now, but I think they are happening at a greater frequency than they used to because the game has changed. Guys have gotten bigger, stronger. Equipment has gotten such that equipment can do a lot of the damage. This hard plastic stuff on shoulder pads and elbow pads sometimes cause concussions when the old stuff might not have. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of why are we seeing concussions at the rate we are now, and it's something that is going to be a continuing problem.
I know if I saw somebody like Zdeno Chara size coming to me, I would just probably just fall on the ice.
Yeah,
and just
I'd run the other way.
I'd be like, all right, sub in. I'm out. A big offseason frenzy is my favorite part of the offseason is the free agent frenzy. We mentioned Zach Parise. Mm-hmm. Where do you think the Flyers need to focus on in terms of free agents for next season?
Well, clearly it's the blue line and defensively. Mm-hmm. And if you assume or if you go forward thinking that Chris Pronger is not going to be there, and we should point out that I don't think the Flyers are going to be necessarily hoping that he officially retires, because then there are some financial issues. If he goes on long-term injury with a concussion and doesn't officially call it quits, then they get some cap relief and they can use that money elsewhere, which is what I think is going to happen. So I think they'll have money to look for long-term free agent defensemen, and there are a couple out there.
Shea Weber.
Yeah. Zach Parise is one of the key forwards that are going to be out there. I don't know that the Flyers necessarily have a need up front. It's going to be more how do we address defensively. And frankly, from what I'm hearing, most GMs, I think, have come to the conclusion that trades are going to be the way they're going to have to address most of their needs this offseason, even more so than the free agency, because the pool's not that big.
And the Flyers have a lot of young talent as well, which emerged this season. Matt Reed, Sean Couturier, just to name a few.
Yep.
And so now you don't really have to worry about that as much, because you have these guys that just played so well. They led the league by far in rookie points, which was a great credit to their organization and farming these guys and their great drafting by the Flyers. Does Jágr come back?
I think
year?
He does. You know, I spoke to him and I did a one-on-one with him the day that they cleaned out their lockers, and he was making it sound like he wanted to play in the NHL. He wasn't convinced it was going to be in Philadelphia. The latest reports that we're hearing is that they've taught contract. They've pretty much, I think, agreed to terms. It may take until late in the summer and maybe even beyond that, because there's a CBA issue.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about pretty soon.
That has to be settled before we even start. So there are a lot of people that think we're not going to start on time, unfortunately. But it sounds to me like Jágr's going to be back.
Do you think, I was really surprised, of all the things that the Flyers did this time last year, when they signed Jágr to a one-year deal, I was thinking, okay, maybe the guy will play 50 games, help out the young guys a little bit, like Giroux, help out in the room a little bit. It'd be that veteran leader. And he had, I think he played 70 games this season and had a lot more points than I think anybody anticipated. Surprised by that?
Shocked. Not only by his on-ice production, but he came in with having been in Europe for 3 years, mm-hmm. been in Russia for 3 years. Before that, of course, I called games with him in Pittsburgh and Washington and New York. And from an outsider's point of view, I had preconceived notions about Jaromír Jágr, what he was like off the ice. He was kind of a loner. I thought he separated himself from his teammates in a lot of instances. I didn't know a whole lot about him, and I learned what a great work ethic he's got, and how good he was for the young guys to be around. And I think he was a pleasant surprise in that regard. His on-ice production was actually a shock to me. And Giroux loved playing with him.
I'm sure.
And I think that maybe pushed Claude's learning curve up a little bit. And so that was a good marriage.
And I mean, there's a one-year deal. I think it was a one-year, $2 million deal that they signed for him.
Yeah, actually, he signed for 3.3. So he got 3.3 last year.
Nice. Yeah. Good for him. Even better.
I hope he doesn't get that kind of money this year, but it sounds like he's going to be back.
Do you think that he is – I know he said after the season was over, it's the most fun he's ever had in playing hockey.
Yep.
And you look at all the years that he spent in Pittsburgh and all those – he won a cup in Pittsburgh. Played for the Rangers, played for the Caps for a quick minute. You think of, and he comes to Philadelphia.
I want to highlight why that was and point out to you that, and I think this was lost on a lot of the media, but remember we went back to why was it necessary to move Carter and Richards? The reason Jaromír Jágr said it was the most enjoyable year he's ever had is because there was zero drama within this hockey club. And before those trades, there was nothing but drama. There were cliques in the dressing room. There were groups of guys going one way, another group going another way. Their priorities weren't all the same. None of that was present in this team this past year. So kudos to Paul Holmgren for correcting that.
Yeah.
He had to have the guts to do it.
I mean, of all the places that he could have signed, I mean, common sense would say, you go back to Pittsburgh, you play a year, they put your jersey up in the rafters, and then call it a career.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the cross-state bitter rival, as we saw throughout this season and into the playoffs, sign with the team.
There were a couple of reasons for that. One, his agent is Peter Svoboda, the former Flyer defenseman.
Sure.
So he knew this market and knew what this city was all about when it came to a hockey team. And in Jagr's mind, I think it was, where am I going to be put in the right position to succeed? He's not a third or a fourth line guy. And in Pittsburgh, he might well have been put in that role. So he knows enough of his own game and his own body and where he is at this point. He had to find the right fit. And Philadelphia proved to be the right fit.
And it absolutely was, because it worked out brilliantly for him. And the fans seemed to, even though it was Jaromir Jagr, and the fans being from Pittsburgh predominantly for most of his career, were like, oh, they didn't say, oh, my God, this is Jagr. They embraced him. They loved him, it seemed like, this season. And they really, especially when he started helping out Giroux on that line, just did a great job this season. And I wouldn't mind seeing him back here. I think he was great here.
I think the young guys throughout this club, their attitude was, we got to play with a legend, and he was a good role model. And we watched his work ethic and learned a lot from him. So I think he's a positive, not a negative.
Did you see a lot of the younger guys? And we mentioned how many rookies were on the Flyers. Did you see a lot of the young guys talking to Jagr, or Jagr kind of taking them under his wing a little bit and saying, hey, look, guys, this is what – you know, you need to do, or this is what you do in this situation. Was he that guy?
Yeah, I think that did happen to a certain degree, and then a lot of it was just watching him. Rookies sometimes, you're 21, 22, 23 years old. If you're smart, you keep your eyes open, your ears open, and your mouth shut, and you watch what other guys are doing. And when you got a legend and a veteran like that, and you watch and his work, if he's the hardest working guy in your team, he would come back to the practice rink during training camp after working out all day with the team. He'd come back at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, put on a weight vest, and go skate more and work more. When you see a legend like that, if you're just watching him, that has an impact.
And we mentioned some minor leaguers in Couturier and Matt Reed and all those guys that were floating around throughout the course of the season. Is there anybody that flew under the radar that, should there be a season and should start on time, that should come up from the Phantoms?
Well, you always have guys in training camp that, you know, surprise you and that you didn't know. You didn't know anything about Matt Reed when you went into training camp this past year. So will there be another one of those guys? Probably somewhere along the line. After incorporating as many first-year players as they did this past year, there's going to be less opportunity for that because all of these guys are going to want to take their game to the next level. So, again, this organization, I think, is set up pretty well for the next several years to come. You've got some young talent in the organization. Blake Kessel, Phil Kessel's brother, just finished his first year with the Phantoms. Nick Cousins, who was a third-round draft pick, and he came in the Richards trade. That draft pick came in the Richards trade.
More draft picks coming back from that.
Again, you're right. Yeah. And so there are Brandon Manning, you saw play a few games at the blue line with this team in the regular season. I think there are some guys that, yes, you're going to hear from. I don't know that there's a Calder candidate as rookie of the year, but time will tell.
Yeah. And speaking of time telling things, the CBA, we mentioned just earlier that CBA is due to expire, I believe, July 1st.
And the CBA is the collective bargaining agreement, the agreement between the players and the owners.
I believe, if I remember correctly, the last time that they did not go through this and they didn't have a season was 04-05, and they locked out the whole season pretty much. And now, do you think the players and the owners get the deal done and see the advancements that hockey has made? I think when they came out of that lockout. I think they were actually stronger. The changes that they made to the game, eliminating the two-line offside pass and the goalie trapezoid and all that, all those intangible items, they clutched down on the penalties a lot more, like the hooking penalties. Do you think that they work it out?
After they became the first sport to lose a year because of a work stoppage, I figured we got through that. We'll never go through that again because none of them, owners, players, are going to be foolish enough to ever let this happen again. And here we are, 6-7 years later. And will we start on time? From what I'm hearing from people that know, this is going to be a contentious negotiation, and we may not start on time. It may be a little like the NBA. Will they get it done? Of course, they eventually will get it done. The issues are different than they were the last time. The Players Association were determined never to agree to a salary cap. Well, in this world now, in all the professional sports, it's almost a given. You have to have some cost certainty if you're an owner. Now the battle is going to be what percentage of the pie should go to the players. And right now it's at about 57% in the National Hockey League, which is higher than all of the other sports, and they don't bring in the kind of money that some of the other sports do. So it's going to be a difficult battle. I don't know that we'll start on time, but I don't think we'll lose a year.
I hope we don't lose a year because, like I said earlier, I like where hockey has gone in the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think, especially in this country, I don't think hockey's the kind of sport that can... They almost took a step back for a couple years, especially in this country. The Canadians are probably going insane when they don't have their hockey because what else is on TV up there when there's no hockey? I mean, going up there, SportsCenter is completely different there. SportsCenter is hockey for the first 45 minutes, and if you have time, you get to the Blue Jays and the Raptors.
That's why if you go around the corner to where my house is from this high school, you'll see an extra larger dish on one side of my house. So I can get all the Canada stuff.
Hey-oh, there you go. That's the move. See, that's the move. I got to pick up one of those dishes. But hopefully the CBA gets worked out, and we'll find out. That's going to be July 1st is when that whole thing goes down. And by then we'll have the cup will be raised. We'll have the parades will be done. Everything will be ready to go. Last thing I want to give you real quick. Grades on the Flyers from a – I guess like a forwards, defense, goaltending, special teams standpoint. Forward-wise, we'll start there.
Well, if you look at it this way, when they made the Richards-Carter trades, the question going into the season was, where are you going to come up with the offense that you've just lost in guys like Ville Leino, Jeff Carter, Mike Richards? And not only did they replace that offense, they... exceeded
Doubled
that
it.
Offense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
And if you look at the goal production from new players versus the players that left, it was more than double. So from that standpoint, I think as one of the highest scoring teams in the National Hockey League all year, I think they finished tied for second or third. I think you have to give them an A+.
And it's funny because they went down 2-0 in so many games. They always dug themselves a hole, but
yeah,
that's the kind of team
a problem.
Based on that offense, you can have... You can be down 3-0 and not be too worried.
Yeah, although that's something they want to address.
Absolutely.
And they want to stop that trend. But from the production standpoint, I think you got to give the forwards an A+.
Absolutely. Defense.
Well, you're affected by the initial injury by
yep.
Pronger. I think the guys that came in and played big minutes and big roles were pretty huge. They've got to figure out if they can get Matt Carl signed. Because he could potentially go elsewhere. I think Braden Coburn had a really good year.
Absolutely.
You got a Coburn, Matt Carl as part of your shutdown group of four with Kimmo Tiimonen. Andre Mazaros, I think, is still a very good piece to this puzzle. And you've got some young defensemen. So I think I'd give the defensemen probably a B or a B-, affected more by circumstances and injuries than anything.
So do you think if you add Shea Weber into the fold, the Flyers,
that'd be huge.
I mean, it's just ginormous. Their blue line would be probably one of the best blue lines in all of hockey.
I think it would rank up there.
You put Tiimonen and Shea Weber back there, it would just be... And then those guys move down, and you have a strong second and a strong third line defenseman.
There's an adage that you can't come playoff time, you can't have too many defensemen.
That's absolutely right. Goaltending.
I would give our goaltending a C this year. They've committed the money. This is the guy they hope to win with. He's got to do it, though.
Yep.
And he hasn't proven yet that he will.
I think it was just a experimental year, I guess, for or a honeymooning year. I
transition
guess
year.
Transition year is an even better word for Briz. And again, like we mentioned this earlier, that coming from that small market in Phoenix to this crazy hockey town that is Philadelphia. But Bob, you had an okay backup in Bob, and Bob could give you some minutes. So I would agree with you on the on the.
There's one other grade aspect, if you want to take it one step further, and
go
that's
for it.
The coaching staff.
Yep.
And in the 15 years that I've been here, this coach might be the best I've seen here for having a feel for his team, for having the ability to get the most out of his club and get them to buy in. I'm a huge Laviolette supporter.
And it, the only thing that I saw from him was obviously on 24/7. You see him and talk to him a lot more than we do. But he just seems like he plays he coaches every single game with so much passion. And he seems like a really good motivator in the room.
Well, that's his strength. And that kind of thing over a long haul can have a shelf life. But I haven't seen evidence that, you know, that's wearing thin on this team. And I think he's smart enough to try to head that off when it becomes an issue.
Well, Tim, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Blue Line. Really appreciate you coming in here during the off season and the craziness that is this week of the final week of school here at Sterling. But I definitely want to thank you for coming in here and sharing your hockey knowledge and all of your insight with us here.
All I had to do was walk around the block. No problem.
It's an easy commute. Easy commute. Don't forget to check us out on the web on Sterling High School's website. This podcast will air tonight, Monday night, the 11th at 6 o'clock, and also the rebroadcast tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the June 12th at 6 o'clock. You can check us out on Twitter at Knights Radio, or if you have a question for us for next season, being that this is the last broadcast, feel free to drop us an email at wshs.radio@gmail.com. I'd like to thank John Flacco again for stopping by on the very last installment of the Blue Line. Tim, as always, thank you. Good luck next season. Hopefully there is a next season, and maybe we'll get you in sometime next season.
My pleasure, and good luck with this program. Very unique for high school.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thanks for listening to Blue Line. I am Rob Strauss. We'll catch up with you next season. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And once again, if you want to check out any of our old existing podcasts, they will be archived on our website, sterling.k12.nj.us. Thanks again for listening. You're listening to the Blue Line right here on WSHS Sterling High School Radio.